For a centenarian plus one, Portland Youth Philharmonic, America's longest-running youth orchestra, still has a spring in its step. PYP continues its historic 101st season with a concert titled Spring Sunrise, taking place this Saturday, March 1st, at Portland's Arlene Schnitzer Concert Hall. The program, conducted by PYP's musical director David Hattner, includes Lily Boulanger's Don Matin de Printemps, Edward Elgar's Cello Concerto in E Minor, which features 2024 Concerto Competition winner Andy Shin, and, to close the concert, Brahms' Second Symphony. As always, we're fortunate to have David here with us to preview Saturday's concert. David, this is PYP's 101st season, and you're in your 17th year as musical director. I've been previewing the concerts with you since season 95. It's no secret I'm a big PYP fan, though not a classical music scholar by any means. So just want to thank you for all our conversations and all your patience.
Well, I'm happy to be here, Ken. Nobody has to study anything to enjoy one of our concerts. Music is a universal language, and you can enjoy it on any level that you like, just to hear the beautiful sounds or to be inspired by hearing a piece you've never heard before or hearing something that you're familiar with, or just enjoying the particular energy that this orchestra uniquely has in our community with their youth and their sense of discovery, even with familiar pieces.
Oh, yes, and I'm a good example of that. Now, PYP's Spring Sunrise concert takes place on Saturday. So a few weeks before the official start of spring, you're getting a jump on the season. What do you look for when programming the annual spring performance?
Well, I think that March is sort of the peak of what we can achieve with the orchestra. As we get into the later spring, we have a shorter period. We have spring break in the middle of it, so we lose a little momentum in our rehearsal. So I like to think of the sort of the biggest piece will be for this concert, and that's where we're putting our Brahms Second Symphony, which is a different kind of challenge from some of the things we play in March. Sometimes we play a big, loud piece with a lot of virtuosity. Brahms is more of an emotional control challenge and a maturity of musical expression challenge.
Now, I want to get to the first piece, though, on Saturday's program. That's by a woman composer, Lily Boulanger. And you always do a great job showcasing works by women who might not always get the same recognition as the men. Previous PYP concerts have included pieces by Amy Beach and Polina Nazikinskaya, among others. So this must be especially inspiring for the young women musicians in the orchestra.
Well, I certainly hope so. The history of music has featured important roles played by women throughout, going all the way back to Hildegard of Bingen, back in very ancient history. And their accomplishments as composers has been undervalued historically. And Lily Boulanger, although she barely lived into her 20s, had quite a lot of accomplishment in that short life. And this is one of the last pieces that she completed before she died. Of a Spring Morning, On a Spring Morning is the name of the piece. It's barely 5 minutes or 6 minutes long, but it's filled with vitality and interest. And it shows why her talent was so admired and her accomplishments in her short life were so admired by the establishment and as well as her very talented sister, Nadia, who continued her legacy by becoming a great teacher of composition. She taught composers as important as Aaron Copland, all the way through people like Astor Piazzolla and even Quincy Jones spent time with Nadia Boulanger. She was very important. So, and part of her mission was to carry on the works of her sister Lily and keep them in print and perform them. So that we owe to her a little bit that we're able to do this piece.
Yeah, I read that actually this is Lily's very last piece that she composed of A Spring Morning. Just to talk a little bit about her, you mentioned she died tragically very young at the age of 24. That was March 1918. And I read she was the first woman to win the very prestigious Prix de Rome Prize for composition when she was just 19 years old. Did you come across her work through Nadia? You said that Nadia is kind of a champion for her sister's compositions.
Well, I think all of us who follow American music know the name Nadia Boulanger. If nothing else, that she was Aaron Copland's teacher. And then we learned that she taught several other important Americans. For me, I didn't know about the younger sister for quite some time. And then people started to play her music. And it was obvious that this is an important compositional voice, even if there aren't very many surviving pieces from her mature years. You know, music history is filled with the what ifs of composers who died at younger ages, although often those younger ages are 32 to 35 in the case of Schubert and Mozart and so forth. You know, 24, I think she was, something like that. It's
Yes.
very, very young indeed.
And this piece is a short one, a little under 6 minutes, and it's described as a tone poem, which I looked up the term. I'm still a little confused. What makes it a tone poem?
Merely that it's the music is to represent something pictorially or tell a story of some sort, whether it's a very specific story where you can actually follow the events, such as in some of Richard Strauss's tone poems, you can actually hear some of his characters performing the actions that their literary references indicate. Like in Don Quixote, each of the variations represents one of the sections of the novel. In this case, I don't believe there's any specificity to the program. It's just to paint a scene of a pastoral spring morning. I believe we can hear birds and insects and a certain amount of activity, whether the animals and creatures represented are real or mythological type creatures. It's not indicated, but it's wonderful to use your imagination. But we certainly hear the kind of activity that happens when spring comes and the sun comes up, and it's much more lively than a winter morning, or the previous work, which was on a sad evening. What was the name of that one? So a very different mood in this piece, but it's just delightful, like a spring morning is.
Now, the second piece on the program is Elgar's Cello Concerto in E minor. That features Andy Shin, the winner of the 2024 Concerto competition. It's on the program because Andy chose it for the competition.
That's right.
And do you know why he selected it?
Well, it's one of the handful of most often performed cello concertos, particularly for younger artists, you know, along with the concertos by Haydn and Saint-Saëns, and a few of the Tchaikovsky variations. Those are the ones we hear probably most often at the competition. We played the Elgar Cello Concerto, I want to say about 8 years ago, and we've heard it in the competition regularly, and Andy happened to come out on top this year, so we're preparing the work again. It's very closely associated with an English cellist named Jacqueline Dupré, who made her premier recording on it about 70 years ago. Of course, it's an English work. Elgar conducted it himself. He made a recording of it, actually, with Beatrice Harrison, a cellist of the time. So it's a work that's been around, and it's become really as part of the standard repertoire of all orchestras since Jacqueline Dupré brought it forth in the 1960s.
Even though he's better known among people like me for his Pomp and Circumstance March, which
Yes.
is usually played at high school and college graduations, I've read that this cello concerto, many considered his masterpiece, and it sets a very different tone than the Pomp and Circumstance March. It's described as a very dark piece that he wrote after the devastation of World War I, so not exactly spring-like.
I think that dark is not the word I would use. I would say melancholy. There's some optimism that's part of it. It's mostly, you know, a lot of people like sad music, you know, so I don't think of it as dark, something that's haunted like Shostakovich, where the music is actively scary and cold. It's very warm, but yes, there's a lot of sadness in it. And the cello is one of the great instruments to express this sort of
Oh,
emotion.
yes, the sound of the cello.
Yes, the great lament in the Jewish tradition, Kol Nidre, was set for the cello by Max Bruch. Shlomo by Ernest Bloch, which we did a number of years ago. The musings of Solomon, the king in the Bible, also with a lot of sadness. So the cello seems to always to represent this. And in this piece, although it has many joyful moments in it, has a lot of that characteristic.
When Andy plays this in the concerto competition, he's playing solo, right? There's no backing orchestra.
He will have a pianist accompanying him in the competition, so that they will all bring a pianist to play the accompaniment.
And here he's being backed by the entire PYP orchestra.
That's right. We will reduce the orchestra slightly for balance, but yes, all of the sections of the orchestra are represented, including the brass.
So I'm thinking it must be exciting for Andy to have this full orchestra kind of filling in the gaps, fleshing it out for him and
Of
playing.
course, it's a great moment in any young musician's life if they get a chance to be a soloist with any orchestra, but PYP is special because we have the amount of rehearsal time to really make everything work together. Whereas in a professional orchestra, the concerto is often rehearsed for about an hour or less for the whole week.
Now, in addition to Andy's excitement, it must be a little nerve-wracking for the soloist, and you've been doing this for many seasons now. Do you have any techniques to help keep them calm and focused on the performance?
I always tell any musician, whether they're in the orchestra or the soloist, is like, just look at me, always calm, even when things are, not going the way we want them to, which doesn't happen too often. I'll try to remain the most calm. That's what I've been trained to do, is to be, when things are stressful, to be a source of calmness and steadiness, and that I'll be there to help. So yeah, they shouldn't do anything but just trust me to be their helper in any situation of that sort. But the main thing is, if you've prepared, there really isn't any amount of nervousness that should get in your way. As long as you've really prepared properly, it should go well.
And a few nerves are not a bad thing, a little adrenaline
No,
in the
remind
system.
you that you're alive, really.
Right. Now, we
Yeah.
should also mention that Andy, like several other concerto competition winners, is something of a musical prodigy. He's 15 now, and he's been studying cello since he was 9, and he's won several other competitions as well. Do you remember when Andy started with PYP, and did you recognize his talent from the very beginning, David?
Interestingly, because Andy is, he's always been very tall. So I did not realize how young he was for a while, because he seemed like he was as tall as an upperclassman. And yet he was only in eighth grade, I found out quite a ways into this. Way he's only what? I guess I knew that he was playing with much older folks, although he didn't look younger. And that's always, very often we've had musicians who are considerably younger than the average in the orchestra. You probably remember the another cellist, Kira Wong, who had been our soloist. She was in the top orchestra in sixth grade. And Hanami Froom, who was our soloist in the fall,
Yes, I
she was
interviewed
in the
Hanami.
she joined the Philharmonic Orchestra, I think, in fifth grade. So there's always a few people who, they've advanced at a fairly young age, so it's not uncommon. But yes, we do notice. It's like, oh, there's that one's got a future if they're already playing with the older folks at such a young age. They usually continue to improve rapidly, which Andy has.
And we've mentioned a little earlier that the third and final work on Saturday's program is Brahms Symphony Number 2, a little different for you, but still a staple of classical music. I read that PYP will be performing this piece for the sixth time in its, long history, 101 seasons. David, have you conducted this symphony before with PYP, or were those five
Yes, I
previous
have.
performers?
This
Oh, you
is
have.
one of, I think we've talked about this, Ken, that, like I said, this is my 17th year. I think I've done around 400 pieces between the Camerata and PYP orchestras, but I've only repeated about half a dozen works in all that time. I've resisted the temptation to sort of cycle through things, but Brahms symphonies are, there's only four of them, and they're so important, and people really want to play them. So we did do this, I think about season 88. So that'd be 13 years ago, if my math is correct.
Wow.
And so all of those musicians are around 30 years old now that did it before. And it was a wonderful experience. It's a beautiful, optimistic symphony. D major is a wonderfully sunny key for the orchestra to play in. And Brahms seemed to be in a more jolly mood than he often is during the course of this piece. It's beautiful, and its challenges are, really, again, about becoming a mature, expressive musician who has patience for a very long span of the structure of it, because we often invest our energy in something that doesn't fully pay off for minutes later, or sometimes quite a few minutes later. So it requires a lot of study and memory, and being sensitive to the momentum of the music, and listening a lot to their colleagues, because Brahms is a composer who really trusts the musicians to make the balance of the orchestra themselves. He doesn't write, five different dynamics for all the different instruments so that everyone knows how loud to play relative to everyone else. He just writes one dynamic, and everyone's supposed to understand who's important and play softer than them, using their brain, by thinking about it. And so we have to rehearse all these things. And we had a little help from David Donsmeyer of the Oregon Symphony. He came and rehearsed them a couple of weeks ago. His daughter is a member of the orchestra, so it was really nice of him to come spend 2.5 hours with them on this symphony. And it was very revelatory for all of us to watch one of our community's most important musicians work with our students. And he also comes from Austria, which is where this music comes from, which was another additional great thing about it. So I love this symphony. Everybody does. And although it's one of the most familiar pieces, virtually all, I think all of the musicians here are playing it for the first time. So they will experience all the joys and exhilarations of doing it together on Saturday. So everyone should come hear it, because you get to not only hear this beautiful piece played by very good musicians, but they get a little something extra, because they're going to see them be transformed by their experience right in front of their eyes.
Before we close, David, I should mention that PYP's wrapping up a fundraising campaign to celebrate the 100th anniversary of its very first concert. That was on Valentine's Day, February 14th, 1925.
Right.
And the money you raise goes to support PYP's community programs, music education initiatives. You had a big pizza party last week after getting snowed out, I think, the week before.
That's right, yeah.
It's funny because it's sunny and warm today, and 2 weeks ago it was icy and snowy. But even though you're wrapping it up, folks can still donate to keep PYP going another 100 seasons.
Of course, we are a charitable organization, and the reason that we exist today is when people heard that concert on February 14th, 1925, they were so astonished. They could not believe that first of all, orchestra music, you didn't hear it all the time in Portland. There was a Portland Symphony, but didn't play that often. And just to see their own community's young people assembled in just a couple of months, and to play at such a level that people came together, and they raised an awful lot of money to make sure that they could keep this conductor, this wonderful conductor who had started this thing, and to help them be able to purchase music that they needed, and all the other things that go into keeping an orchestra. And they've formed a board of directors, and the organization has been on very solid footing from then until now. And there's a lot of excitement coming up for PYP. We got a lot of big plans. So people wanting to support us, so that the people who are born into this community and grow up and are educated by our schools will have this unique opportunity to be in an orchestra that really plays the same way a professional orchestra plays once they're through our special rehearsal process, which PYP invented back there in 1924, 25. Being the oldest youth orchestra, we can lay claim to some things that many other orchestras have adopted in the meantime, but we're done here first, and we still think nobody does it better.
If people would like to donate, they can do it online at portlandyouthphil.org/support/donate.
It's all tax deductible.
Well, David, thanks so much for talking with us today, and all the best to you and the orchestra on Saturday.
Thank you. Enjoy the concert, Ken.
I will. I always do. Thank you, David. We've been talking with David Hattner, musical director of the Portland Youth Philharmonic, now in their 101st season. David will be conducting PYP's Spring Sunrise Concert this Saturday, March 1st, at Portland's Arlene Schnitzer Concert Hall, starting at 7:30 p.m. You can find out more online and purchase tickets at portlandyouthphil.org. This is Ken Jones, whose voice is usually a lot better than this, for KBOO's News in Depth.